anyone have a question or anything to say? Including those who've been already on retreat for a few days, if you ask something about what we've talked about in the previous days, we can kind of fill that out for those who weren't here. So I'd like to speak about perfection. So first, just hearing the word, what happens? We assume we're not. We assume the world is not. And also, maybe we assume we should be. There's a song about a trusting mind called the Sinsen Ming by Seng Tsan. Would be somehow a good tongue twister in there. And towards the end of, it's a very dense and kind of ambitious in a way song, like he's going to the point over and over again. And right near the end, he says, to live in this realization, so you don't know now what realization, but to live in this realization, the realization of what he's calling the great way. And he doesn't spell out what for him is the great way exactly. He doesn't say that first you take two steps to the left and then you take one step to the right and then you turn around. And he doesn't say exactly what the great way is. And he seems to say that the great way is either a way of living or expressing our true nature or the same as our true nature. Then we have another phrase, true nature. What is that? Sometimes it just resonates to hear that there might be a true nature. We could call it our deeper nature, because we know very well how our biology nature sometimes gets us doing things we wish we hadn't done every day. The ways that survivalism takes over and kind of infests our everyday situations where there's not an issue of survival. But we feel like we would die if we don't get that recognition or if we don't get to the food now, not in 5 minutes' time. To live in this realization is not to worry about perfection or non-perfection. So in one way, this is a definition of what happens when the great way happens. There is a not worrying about perfection. There is a not worrying about non-perfection. How would it be in your life if there were a not worrying about perfection? And how would it be in our lives if there were a not worrying about non-perfection? We notice that something is not perfect and there's not worrying about it. So we notice that the mind is going nuts or that the heart is heavy or that we're exhausted. And there's a not worrying about. It draws our attention to that mechanism to worry about? What is it that starts our worrying about perfection and non-perfection? Some people think that it's better not to talk about enlightenment, and it's better not to talk about higher or deeper states of meditation publicly, that one should speak about it only privately. And there is a good reason for that also. As sometimes when we speak about anything, even the weather, so the rainbow yesterday, once we speak about it, it's already starting to lose its magic. There's too much put onto something. But I also love that people have dared to talk about the fulfillment of the human being. So what's possible for us? So to even know that it's actually possible to live a happy life, that there is something called the sure heart's release that can come about. Partly by our doing and partly not by our doing. No matter how contorted, no matter how messed up you think you are. To hear that there is a sure heart's release. So not just a little bit of relief for a while, but a sure heart's release. Not a release that then builds back up into tension to release again, but a sure heart's release. The possibility that we're even made for that. In some of the older texts where people wrote down what they think that the Buddha, Gautama Buddha, said, there are some descriptions of what happens as we get closer to our deeper nature, as we live the great way more. And one really simple but striking part of the description of what's called a stream enterer. So someone didn't just check the temperature of the water with the toe. And they're not finished. Also, speaking of perfection and non-perfection. And there's this lovely, simple, really bare-bones statement that one of the things that happens is no longer hiding our faults. So it's not that there are not faults. Even when we've fallen into the stream is usually what happens. We imagine that it'll be at the cliff, the moment of truth, and will we fling ourselves into the abyss or not? And then we get tired of the whole drama and we fall over. And part of the falling, part of that kind of beginning of the sure heart's release, not the end, but is this naturally not caring if others see my faults. So not pretending. It also starts to help us notice that we're not always sure what a fault is. And by not hiding it, we can find out. So noticing how often it does happen in the human thought realm, how often we think during the day, that we're so glad no one can hear what we're thinking or how much we're thinking or what the emotion is or whatever. And we're sure that we're the only ones who are taking so long, who are either so new to meditation or have had so many amazing teachings that how could we be so petty? It's fun to speak in the United States where I can say the word petty and not necessarily stop and try to think of a better, different word that's easier. But sometimes this habit that my mind has, usually I teach with people who are from all over the world who have a different kind of English than we have. We would call it less English. But sometimes it's really great to have to come back and think, what do I mean by petty? And petty reminds me of like French petit, like small. We can't believe how small-hearted, small-minded. And we're just so glad that we hope people don't notice too much. So it's not a small thing at all to give up that game. It's not an easy thing to practice also towards that release. And it's a curious thing with spiritual practice, because even when we realize that what we would love most is to be free from pretending, from hiding what we think our faults are, and showing what we think is supposed to be the right thing. The powerful thing, or the smart thing, or the spiritual thing, or whatever. The chilled or the sordid or whatever kind of pretense. So we could kind of rewind and start at a beginning where there's a strong need for gentleness in our, we might even as well say soul, or in our inner being. First of all, there's a need for gentleness. And second of all, we don't know how to manufacture that. We don't know where to get it. And third of all, usually what stops us most is that we would like to be in possession of a how-to list before we start anything. So if we could rewind that, if we could give up the idea that there is a how-to, if we could accept that how happens and we look back and see how it happened. The genuine how is not something we know in advance. And if you think back on your life, you'll remember moments where it was like that really clearly. Usually it's when we know we don't know how, and something happens anyway. And sometimes it happens more gracefully than we could have planned. Sometimes it's the most awkward moment of our lives, and still it's okay. So noticing when we are asked, we're kind of demanding of life to tell us how so that we can start. And maybe it's just an excuse not to start, not to even test the temperature of the stream of our true nature. It's not some stream out there that we have to find. We know it. It's streaming through us. We wouldn't be here without it. Not just here on a retreat. We would not be alive without it. Not knowing how, but feeling a need to generate love for what we find happening. We start to notice that feeling guilty and being angry and frustrated with ourselves for not fitting our idea of perfection doesn't seem very helpful. We would never treat another person that way, at least not in front of others. So feeling a need to allow love, to generate love, to let it in, to let it out, to know love. And feeling the not knowing how is a good place to be. It's important here to be really, really careful about one thing. Can we so simply feel that love would be really helpful and I don't feel love? And not go farther than that. And even be a little more simple. Even more simple than that. Noticing that love is needed, gentleness is needed, kindness is needed, and it isn't happening. Self-criticism is happening, self-hatred is happening, blaming, frustration, disappointment, etc. is happening. The up and down, the arrogance and insecurity is happening. The fact that it's painful does tell us something. It tells us that it's not our true nature. The self-criticism and blaming. The blaming inside, blaming outside. So we're starting to uncover a very subtle knowing that love is needed. So that's maybe as simple as we can go. And can we stay that simple? That there is a knowing that love is important. If you prefer a different word from love, that's fine with me. Non-aggression will be fine. Something different from what I've tried so far would be fine. So the simple thing, if we can start that simple, there's a knowing that love would be good here. That love might even be natural here. There's a knowing that I don't know how. There might be an acceptance that I'm not supposed to know how. And so I can relax into that deep knowing that love is needed. Even if I'm already somewhat or very familiar with love or kindness or non-aggression, the nature of that love, that great way, is to stretch us. There's still a knowing of the need for love. If we can let that knowing of the need for love not turn on the machine of something's wrong with me, of not having love. If we can stay with knowing love is important and not touch the experiential thought that I don't have it, I can't get it, I'm not good enough, etc. Gautam Buddha, and I love to say his name like it's that Buddha because there are so many Buddhas. It's not just the Buddha as if there was one ever, but Gautam Buddha, that one. Maybe he's more famous because he lived a really long time and he had a really smart guy who was following around who didn't get enlightened until afterwards, so he could really remember everything. He just really cared about every word and remembered it and passed it on. And they pass it on word of mouth for a really long time. And then people started writing it down. So we're not sure about what we have. But it has some link to a real person who might as well be in the room. He had just as real of a life as we do. And he talks about imperfections of mind that weaken wisdom. And that it's possible to grow out of these imperfections of mind that weaken wisdom. So if we can feel the need for kindness, love, non-aggression, we could also call it the need for wisdom. And we stick with that, and we notice when the sense that there isn't enough kindness happening. Is turning on the machine of unkindness, of not enoughness. Then we know that we're experiencing what people have experienced for thousands of years, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Scientists keep discovering signs from the past that we were more advanced, so-called advanced, like making beautiful things and pottery and more and more and more thousands of years ago than we thought. So we could have, we could start to reshape our image of the, our species. We're maybe not only so bad as we think. And if we're aware of what are the imperfections of mind that weaken wisdom, and we are aware that we love wisdom, it's not the juiciest word in the world, but you know how helpful it's been. You know it saved you. Those few times we can remember that we didn't repeat the mistake, we didn't say it again, or we did say it finally. We can start to reshape our sense of what wisdom is. So it's hard enough to live with weakened wisdom is not a good idea. So if we can really know that it so naturally happens, that there are imperfections in the mind, that when they get a bit of energy, make it nearly impossible to feel what's true for us, what is our deeper nature. And that's all. It's actually not such a big deal. It's like driving in the car and it's raining really hard and your windshield wipers, you forgot to change the blades, oops, and you can't really see very well. What are you gonna do? You might slow down, you might pull over. It's gonna stop raining after a while. Gautam Buddha talks about this experience of not enoughness, which sometimes comes out as comparing ourselves to others, sometimes, like almost all the time. And sometimes we could just give it the big bad name of greed. But sometimes when we give the big bad name, we lose access to what the experience is, which is a little more spacious than that word. A little more workable is what I mean by spacious. We can move around. We can feel there's a feeling of not enoughness, and there's this impulse to look outside and see how perfect they are and how imperfect I am, or how imperfect they are and how perfect I am, or how we're all so perfect or how we're all so imperfect. It's a kind of Gautam Buddha style covering all the bases. That's what we do. And he gives a simile for this experience that we all have. And isn't it kind of good to know that we could stop pretending that we don't have it? It might encourage us to put more than our toe in the stream today. He's just describing what happens to us. And he's saying that it's like being in debt. So the big bad word greed, described as an experience like being in debt. I just love, I think it's such a great metaphor. Because then we can get to know greed better. When we hear the word greed, first of all, we know it's wrong, so we shouldn't be feeling it. And so then we don't really feel it. But to say that it's like being in debt, I think helps us get back grounded with the actual experience. He's saying that greed or not enoughness is not like going into your neighbor's house and stealing what they have that you think you want. It's like your neighbor gave something to you that was not yours, that you are borrowing, and that you'd like to pay back. And I find it a really rich metaphor, and one really kind of a way that has a special place in my heart, I would say. Sometimes being in the hall together and doing what we do here, which is not much, seemingly, and sometimes a lot, unseemingly. And there's a way that we kind of walk through the days together, each having a different experience at the same time walking together. It's amazing how each retreat is different. So it's been maybe 12 years or so of teaching retreats and 25 years of going on retreats. And one beautiful thing that happens, that I happened to be feeling today in the hall, is a feeling where something has been lodged in us, as if we have a splinter in our skin. Something got stuck in us. And I like the word that came to me as I was feeling this, what was lodged getting unlodged. Sometimes things get lodged in us. We have a difficult experience or a strong experience or an experience so many times that it's so familiar that it just sticks. But also we give lodging to what's lodged in us. Which doesn't mean, oh, we should feel guilty about all of our imperfections. It means there's a chance to let go of giving lodging to. There's a chance that the splinter does have a way of coming unlodged, dislodged. All of the accumulated ideas, especially, and ideas with an emotional charge that have gotten lodged. We can just say it gotten lodged. It's more true. We get the sense of how it's not really quite anyone's fault, exactly. There is some responsibility here and there. And all of those, like splinters, hurt. It's not our free skin. Does that make sense? The ways that we're living according to a rule that at some point we realize is not ours. We're sitting up straight because it's a rule we've heard somewhere. And then we realize it's not our rule. Our energy doesn't naturally invest in sitting up straight for some people. Or sometimes when we let go of the rule, a different kind of straightness comes. That's not from the idea, it's not from the outside in, it's not from something lodged in our skin, it's from our marrow. So these things that we've borrowed from others, the ways that we're in debt, different kind of debt from the usual. Maybe people won't be so happy to get it back. We could give it back with interest, give it back with kindness, with a kind of respect, sometimes when it is our parents or ancestors that we're giving it back to, a respect that this is within the realm of their responsibility and their possibility, not ours. And it's not a loving act to try to take it and keep it and give it lodging. To let this more deeply natural dislodging happen, to make space for that to happen. To kind of strengthen our immune system with gentleness, kindness, from inside and outside. When people speak about spirituality and religion, eventually they come to ideas of non-duality. So we could start with ideas of non-duality also, where we need love and it can come from inside and outside, not two. Not making those two things. Not setting up a rule that I have to give it to myself because I can, but I can give it to myself. And I can receive it. And sometimes we find that the second part is harder. Even when the first was the hardest thing. So Gautama Buddha continues with the story. We're in debt. And we start a business. I love that he uses this example. As a homeless wanderer with no paid job. At the time, they would literally use the rags that they found in the trash heap, stitch it together for their clothes. I'm sure he got good stuff from people. But that the idea was to use what others had finished with. One time, his foster mother had hand-woven a piece for him. And she, like in this really sacred moment, was coming to him and presenting it to him. And he was like, thanks, Mom, I'm going to give it away. So this is the story that he tells. So we're in debt, and we start a business. And the business is successful. And we not only make enough to pay back our debt, we make enough from the business to support a family. So we could feel for ourselves what supporting a family means. And what it feels like to be that support, not just the self-centered striving, not just me getting enlightened for a kind of abstract benefit of all beings, but an actual support. And what does it mean in the context of debt? And what does it mean in the context of dislodging foreign objects and foreign opinions and foreign rules? Even when it's been an inspiration to see another person, how they live or whatever, sometimes we stick it in and then we kind of abide by that instead of letting the inspiration touch us more deeply. So the kindness and the gentleness helps us get from the outside inspiration to the inside inspiration and let that be one thing that's not imitating, which is then pretending again. It's not making a new ideal, a new perfection that we follow. True perfection would be more of a kind of leadership that can't tell you where we're going. A leadership that's willing to say, I'm leading and I don't know how we're going and I don't know where we're going. And we're going. Because I've noticed that when I thought I knew where and how I was going, it wasn't as good as when I know I don't know. And even supporting a family, and I can kind of speak from the experience of this year with my son Gyan that you've seen around. He's grown into a new phase where he's not so happy to just come along to everything anymore. He used to be this amazing little child who would come to the singing in the evening, and he'd come even to Dharma talks and just quietly play with his car the whole time. And Just the other night he came to the singing, the first singing he came to. He came twice. The first time he came, about 5 minutes into it, "I'm bored, Mommy. Mommy, I'm really bored." And the second singing he came to, he had a complete meltdown because he couldn't find this dinosaur. We still can't find the dinosaur. If anyone sees a dinosaur around, I think it's a Saurolophus. And still saying, I don't know where we're going or how, but we're going. And he's part of it. And you're part of it. One thing that can help us recognize, I'll just pause because I noticed that I'm sweating and I grew up in the South, so I don't know if we want to turn on the air conditioning. Okay. I don't mind, but I'm starting to learn that not everyone grew up in the Deep South. So tell me if you can't hear me, come closer. Very often it happens, it so happens that the dislodging happens when we're not paying attention to it. We're not trying to get the splinter out. We're just resting and thinking that we're daydreaming and doing it wrong, and but we're relaxed enough that something lets itself go. We might be open to feel a certain kind of relief there. And I also like this word relief with its double meaning. So the relief of not having this painful, constricting, non-native happening. And in that relief, sometimes our world, like our perceptions and also the inner world, things come into relief in the sense of things are more three-dimensional or four-dimensional or multidimensional again. And it feels familiar and shocking at the same time. So in that moment, it might be just good to appreciate that something has left. And it might be good not to try to figure out what it was in that moment. But being open for that to come through, kind of click, in another moment that you're resting and thinking that you're doing it wrong or right, but you're relaxed enough for something to happen. There might be that recognition. Can you hear? It's okay? It's okay on this side? Okay. There might be that recognition that we crave that something is happening. And there might not be that recognition that something's happening, even when things are happening. And I would just like to speak to that wish for the recognition that something's happening. The greed for the recognition, the sense of lack of recognition. First, we could think of simplifying again. I wish there could be some recognition so that I could encourage myself to keep going, even though it seems like I'm wasting my time. But what if we were told from the beginning, you're not going to get any recognition? Are you still going to go? Are you still going to make your best guess of the next step? And won't it be lighter than when you're doing it secretly, hoping for the recognition? So we're still talking about perfection and non-perfection again. We could back up to the wish to notice that something's happening, to know that I'm not wasting my time. Because maybe I got the splinter lodged in me that we're not supposed to waste time. Or maybe I feel a kind of aliveness and urgency in a good way about my life and really wanting to live it. One of the problems with recognition, whether from outside or from inside, is that it's so easy to think how great we are, that we did it, when we know we didn't. We did our part, and we didn't do the other part. Something else happened. And sometimes having a great experience and knowing we had a great experience is the curse of a lifetime. People have a great experience and they know they did, and it follows them around like an FBI agent or whatever image you'd like for years, for decades, trying to get it back or thinking that now that they did that, they don't need to do anything else or whatever. And there's actually kind of a description of this in the utterly simple lines about what yoga is that were written by Patanjali, talking about one of the distortions of our mind, one of the distortions of our ability to know directly the true nature of things, the true nature of ourselves. Patanjali suggests that even correct seeing, including a deep experience of what is a distortion of what we could call the great way, is a distortion of now the continuing experiencing of what is. So maybe my mind keeps referring back to that experience, those particular sensations, that image or whatever, as being the thing, partly out of the grace of it and the gratitude, and partly maybe out of this at least gives me a way of feeling less insecure. I can kind of stack myself up on this memory. I can have some relief from my insecurity, from my sense of lack, from my debt. But even a true experience used that way as a recognition, confirmation, as a way to boost myself up, is coming from a place of believing I must boost myself up. And so it's actually like incurring more debt. It feels like it's helping us pay off our debt, at least the interest or whatever. It's actually more debt. And so sometimes, what a blessing that things are happening. Splinters are dislodging, opinions are dislodging, rules are dislodging, and we don't know it. To know that that happens is important. That so often when we think something important is going on, we may or may not be right. And so often when we think nothing is happening, and we're back where we started, or actually, to be honest, we're worse in our eyes. That experience will almost certainly happen to you. That thought, that feeling. If you could just know that there might be some truth in that perception of yourself, but basically, you're surely wrong. There might be the seed of truth that you want to kind of harvest and take care of so you can plant it. So seeds need a certain kind of care to be able to sprout. They need to be able to dry out first. So if we can, in that moment where you think you're worse than ever, or at least back where you started after all these hours, days, years, decades, whatever, if you can wait and try to feel for the seed and remove the seed from all that emotional charge and put it somewhere dry. dry and dark for a while until it's the season. So if it's true that the kind of ways that we try to stand ourselves up are based on, if you find in your experience that every time you try to stand yourself up, it's actually based on that place of debt and is asking for more debt. It's borrowing from outside. If you find that movement happening, could we at least stop getting more into debt? And could we consider the possibility that our perfection already is? It doesn't need to be stood up. We might need to go into some kind of business and make some money to pay off the debt, but it's not that we do that in order to create our true nature. It's not that we do that in order to make ourselves different and therefore perfect. We go into business to make money, so we find a source of abundance, we find a source of enoughness, we find a source of nourishment that's more than enough. It's not only enough for me, it's enough to actually, that others could count on it. Because when you start a family, when you have a family, when you realize that your family's not just related by blood, it's not something that you can ever get out of. So you don't lightly become a source or resource for others. You haven't lightly become that. You are already that. That work that we do of starting the business, what kind of business is it going to be? So what is the way of tapping into love? What is the way of experiencing enoughness? What is the way of not letting energy get into that place that feels that lack is the truest thing about me and the truest thing about the world? We start the business and we let the resources fill and overflow. To heal the imperfections of the mind that block us from experiencing our true nature, that block us from experiencing the perfection. It's not that then we look down and see, oh yeah, I saw that in a magazine. It's not that kind of recognizable perfection. It's recognizable in another way from the gut. So there's another line about perfection that I love and I've said dozens of times from the Tao Te Ching. And the line in English dares to start with not just perfection, but true perfection. It's kind of like putting up a lightning rod, not just perfection. He's like, I'm not going to talk about just perfection. I'm going to talk about true perfection. And what does he say about true perfection, Lao Tzu? True perfection, what does it seem to be? It seems to be imperfect. It just crashes down all our ideas of perfection, much less true or untrue. It seems imperfect, yet is perfectly itself. Could that be true about you? That despite all the seeming imperfection, this is what this guy is saying, Lao Tzu, no matter how seemingly imperfect, and without touching any of that seeming imperfection, not caring about perfection and non-perfection. Perfectly ourselves. Gautam Buddha also said, as we feel for the possibility of directly experiencing things as they are, things inside, things outside, things are not as they seem. And good old Gautam would never stop there. Very precise. Things are not as they seem. Sometimes we get a glimpse of that. Things are not as they seem. I am not as I seem. Those people are not as they seem. I start to doubt my perception. My perception shifts and things come into relief. They come into 3, 4, 5, 6 dimensions, whatever. Things are not as they seem, and they are not different. I love that. If we kind of saw ourselves on some kind of silver flight, things are not as they seem, and we're going to transcend it all, and they're not different. It also gives us a kind of glimpse of things are not as they seem. The seeming part is completely fabricated. And they are not different. It shows us that we're never far from direct experience of what is. Things are not different from what they seem. It's not like everything then turns inside out and has wings or whatever. Things are not as they seem, and they are not different. Are there any questions or anything to say? It doesn't have to be a question. You might need to speak more loudly.
For a minute, I was thinking about the serpent, the Greek image of the serpent eating its tail. And then I was thinking about this brink that we were talking about yesterday, this abyss or chasm or something. And I use those words lovingly. Because as soon as you say, when you were quoting Lao Tzu, and you challenged, could that be you? Immediately, of course, I said, well, it could be, but it's not, because, you know, I just need to fix, you know, a laundry list of things. And it's that doubt, that correction that stops us from that silver flight that you just mentioned, or something like that.
Yeah.
Seems impossible, because as soon as you name it, it's
impossible.
Yeah.
So I love about the word perfect being per, like perforate, like through, infect, made. And so it's exactly that, where we hold back, it couldn't be me right now. She can't be talking about me right now. Not me. But I am, of course. The perfect, where we hold back from, like, the complete, like, it's made through. In this moment, it's made through again. It doesn't, when we speak about it, it becomes a different kind of thing. But in the living moment, where things are fully themselves, like the sound is fully itself and it's gone at the same time, and there's not any time to do anything with it. So feeling our hesitation, who me, now, and feeling that even when that's happening, even that very experience, we could feel it fully, we could let it be fully, seemingly imperfect, completely itself, not actually necessarily even, I mean, I didn't make it happen. So is it my fault? And then what else is? So I like that word, even though the word perfect drives us crazy, literally. Thank you. So let's just have a few moments silent together.